B-Pod Studios.
The Felger and Mass podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook.
To me, the whole thing with the finger under between the legs, antiquated,
archaic,
and weird.
I mean, the whole thing is freaking silly.
It's Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, 4 o'clock hour, Felger and Mass. A lot of things on the board. We start off talking about the train wreck Red Sox, still on the table. The importance of Belichick and Mac Jones's relationship. Tommy Curran says it's a non-factor. Shouldn't be an issue because it was Bill and Brady hated each other, and that wasn't a problem. So this shouldn't either. This shouldn't be either. That's on the table. I said on Messi and the streaming and all that. Whatever you want. Back to your calls on everything. Here's Mark and Shelton on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, one thing that I want Tony's take on, and I haven't heard this yet, is about Chaim Bloom and this bullpen that they had. Jansen, Chris Martin, and I know Blyer's been bad, but he was another arm. I know that the thought in the beginning of the season was they're going to have these guys so they can be competitive. I think Bloom was thinking, I have these guys so I could trade them in July and get more prospects for them. I think they knew that they were going to be bad, and he could get these relievers who are valuable because in July, teams that are competing, the Red Sox never are anymore, but teams that actually want to compete for a World Series need good bullpen pieces. And Martin's been good. Jansen's had a great career. And Blyer, I know he's been bad, but they've had some arms in the bullpen that I think Bloom was thinking, I'm going to flip these guys in July. I'm not going to need them for a postseason run. We're going to suck.
What do you think, Mass?
Mark, I agree with you.
Really?
Yeah, at least in part. Yes, and I think this is part of the reason they didn't do four-year deals. Because teams get turned away from that, you know, You know, they're reluctant to invest in those when they're acquiring players by trade, even if it is only $6.5 million per year for a guy like Michael Wacha. But when it's a 1 or 2 year deal, you can bite the bullet. Teams will bite or the Red Sox can say in the case of Jansen, we'll trade you Jansen. He's got one more year at 16 and we'll give you six of it. Now you can get a better prospect back. So I think it is twofold. If we're good, fine, we keep them. If not, we trade them away. They're more attractive to other teams and I can get my prospects, which again means you're having it. You're straddling the line. So you're really not building it to win. What you're really doing is covering your ass with every move you make.
It's kind of transactional.
Right.
You know, which is...
It's diversification is what it is.
Mid-market teams have to be.
Yeah. So, but again, what good does that... I also think it affects the prospect you get back. So you're not going to get as good a player back if you have to, you know, unless you're willing to eat money, and you're going to have to eat a lot of it.
Here's Mark in Connecticut on Boston Sports. Yes, Mark.
Hey, guys. I want to try to remember this. This is a couple segments ago about the state of Boston sports. The one thing about being a little older is having a memory of where we really were as a coming up, Mike, that you brought up a couple of times about they don't understand how suck really means. I go back. The Red Sox now remind me of the Buddy LaRue, Gene Yawkey, forgetting to put the contracts in the mail to Burleson, Fisk, and Lynn all on the same day, falling apart there. We forget about the Patriots and game day Keith Sims draft and the Victor Kiam mess and the whole thing we had with them.
So what are you saying, Mark?
What I'm saying is that the people who are walking around with their lips hanging on the ground of how bad we are don't have the memories of really how bad we really were.
They don't know what really bad is. Mm-hmm. They don't get it. They don't know. And even if they don't, I'm just here to tell you again. The Celtics are no lower than the second odds-on favorite to win the NBA title next year. Can I ask you to do the same thing with the Stanley Cup odds? I bet your Bruins are top five. I bet the Bruins will be top five odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup in 2023-24.
I bet they're not that high, but I bet they're in the top 10.
Okay, I mean, they're up there, and they should be up there. And they're about to enter a really interesting offseason. They have too many good players. They could lose, I won't say half their roster, but... You know, half their eligible players they could get rid of and they keep the other half and have a totally different team and still be really good.
Yeah, they're tied for fifth with like two other teams.
Oh, there you go.
Three other teams.
Okay, so they're a top five team to win the Stanley Cup. You have no idea. The state of Boston sport. You're going to have two contending teams for sure next year. And who knows on the Patriots? I think they're going to be better. And I don't like their direction and all those big macro things are still true. But... I think they're going to be a decent team next year.
I happen to agree with them on the clownish state of the Red Sox.
Okay. The Sox are that's the one I would feel sort of not good about.
I mean, that whole thing with the contracts, again, if you're a kid, look that one up. Back then, you had to put contract had to be postmarked on a certain deadline. The Red Sox blew it. That's how Carlton Fisk became a free agent.
Right.
You idiots.
Steven Dedham. Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, if you guys get the same feeling, but I kind of get a little bit of the feeling that the Patriots fans and are pinning their hopes on Bill O'Brien. It's almost as if they're pinning their hopes on this guy that he's going to turn everything around. I mean, he will improve the offense because it couldn't have got any worse than it was last year. And they might be a little bit better, but between the schedule they have and their rivals in the division, unless any one of these teams, the Bills, the Dolphins, or the Jets, get a catastrophic injury, this team's coming in last. I just want to know your comment on that. Thanks.
Okay, I don't have him in last, but I think Bill O'Brien will be good to go from 7 to maybe 10 wins. Like, I think a functional scheme and coaching can make that big of a difference.
Sure.
I mean, it was that bad last year.
But you understand his point.
I think the ceiling is, I agree with the point being that Bill O'Brien can make them functional again. He can't make them elite.
Right.
Like, and without an elite passing game, you're really not going that far.
No, and this is, you know, if this were the kind of move that the Kansas City Chiefs made when they brought in Spagnuolo and, you know, they had Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, then you could say, okay, this might trigger a Super Bowl.
Missing piece.
Right. Like, you know, and maybe you have some personnel on defense and you just got to get it to a functional point because you've got everything else. I don't know if the Patriots have anything else. There's a lot on O'Brien. Like, the idea that this is somehow, and I'm not putting you in this category, but the idea that this is somehow an elixir and that all of a sudden they're going to go, what, 13-4 is preposterous. That I just don't think it's going to be that dramatic. It'll help, but it's not going to be like all of a sudden Mac Jones is going to turn into Peyton Manning.
Brad in Northborough on the streaming. Yes, Brad.
Yeah, guys. But before we get into that, we're not heading in the dark days of Boston sports. I am a 42 and a dinosaur, Mike, and I cut the cord a year ago because I wanted to save some money, lost my job, but now I'm back, baby, and I'm going back to cable. And but forget that for a second. The 90s, the early 90s were horrendous. So, I mean, anyone that went through that is awful.
Okay, so you just remember history, but you even don't have to remember history. On what planet are you in bad shape where your winter sports teams are, you know, considered among the odds-on favorites to win a championship, and there's still a little bit of wind at the sails of the Patriots thing? There still is. Belichick's still on the sidelines, and he's got 6 Super Bowls, 8 if you asked him. And it's like, you're not Nowheresville on the football team. You're frustrated with the football team, but you're not Nowheresville. The Red Sox fan is different. That feels bleak.
Oh, please, that's hell.
But I think we're in a, you know, really interesting spot. I think, you know, the Celtics and Bruins are in for some, those are interesting off seasons where they can still come out of them really good and different. Alan in Florida, go.
Yeah, you know something, I've been following the Red Sox for a long time. And, you know, Maz, by the way, I liked your opinion, very eloquent when we were talking about the golf yesterday. But anyway, afterwards you made a comment, yeah, we're like, and you kind of made a joke. Oh, Red Sox fans said they won't watch the game. Well, you know what? I used to watch 162, either record them or that. Last night, I sat there and I watched Houston and Toronto. Then I watched the Mets and the Braves. I tuned in the Red Sox game to get the score one time. Then I watched the second half, which in an NBA, all you have to do is watch the last 5 minutes anyway. So I watched that. I never even turned, and I have friends, and I'm talking about all ages, my son-in-laws, and all at different ages, feel the same way. So if you think that fans like me, and you know what a fanatic I was, I can't stand. This is ridiculous. It's like a joke. Who's on second base?
Okay, exactly. I've come to learn it's someone named Emmanuel Valdez. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, who plays like he's wearing his cleats on his hands.
Who blows. Does not know how to catch and throw.
He's brutal defensively.
My God.
Seriously, that guy should be working in the freaking meat department. He's a butcher.
He sucks.
He's a butcher defensively. He blows. And you know what? Again, the part of the problem on that play last night, not to get into the minutiae on this particular topic, but it's the shortstop's ball.
Yeah, he's charging.
Of course, Enrique Hernandez is chucking everything into the seats anyway, so what's the freaking difference? Like, he was likely to heave it like a grenade. I mean, that was, you know, so I'm not sure he would have made the play either, but it's a shortstop's ball. He's going that way. Instead, they let, you know, fingers him.
Edward Scissorhands over there,
yes,
in second base.
Exactly. Fingers McGillicuddy, the safecracker handle it.
Okay, this is an Apple TV lightning round. I'm not going to let this take over the show. Quickly, Cody and Milford, go. Bad start. Here's Dan and Peabody. Go.
Felger, it's even worse than you think. You have Apple, you say. So if you go on your Apple TV tonight and try to put on an MLS game, you won't be able to get it. You have to subscribe. You have to not only be an Apple TV subscriber, but there's an extra step you need to take and subscribe to the MLS package.
A subscription within the subscription.
Aww. Yeah.
That's really great. No, see, Maz, most people aren't like you.
I mean, you don't have to subscribe to like MLB TV or NHL TV or NBA TV. You don't have to subscribe to those.
Like on Xfinity?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a one call and it's on.
Okay.
Just but like you press one button on Apple to subscribe.
Bingo. This guy, you guys are bitches. You know that? Seriously. This guy's a little baby, the guy who just called. Oh, yeah, but then I have to pay for the... Well, if you want to watch football, what do you think you have to do? You're going to do the same crap. Welcome into the 21st century. And you're a little more in tune with that part
of it. No, I'm not. No, it's not as easy.
Oh, but then I got to pay for the MLS app. Yeah, you do. You have to pay for everything now. Welcome to the real world.
And it's a much more...
Donkey.
It's much more of a chafe. Most people at Mass, I think you enjoy going home and troubleshooting.
I don't enjoy going home and troubleshooting.
You have that gene.
No, I don't.
You do.
No, I don't. I just know how to do it. I don't enjoy it.
So I think anyone who does it has that gene. They want to play around with the computer.
Yeah, but you're not dumb.
I'm not smart.
Yes, you are.
And I don't want to play around with my computer.
Oh, but I don't want to pay for the app. Then I got to pay for the app. Yeah, you do. That's right. Just like you got to pay for your cable. Then you got to pay for your pay stations. See, Murray gets it.
My pay stations?
Yeah, there are some on there that you have to pay for. They don't just come with your cable subscription. You have to pay extra for those stations.
They pay call stations.
Them, yeah, like microtransactions, things of that nature. Like ATO.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I hate it all, but I'm no longer fighting the rising tide of this. This is where it's going. I'm not going to be left behind. And I'm willing and ready to work for any of these big companies that will be streaming.
Oh, well, that's different. Available. Oh, no, we'll all be streaming eventually. I know this. Like, for all my rants about podcasts and streaming, that's where we're going. I mean, I know. Believe me, I'll take the check from the Saudis just like everybody else. But I'm telling you.
Not me.
It is not the same experience. It's not just as easy as me getting the MLB Network on cable. It's not. I have the MLB Network on cable. I don't know when I ordered it, but I have it and it's on. I don't have to log in and authenticate and then get a subscription within a subscription. I just don't.
You know, I do. I have tremendous compassion and sympathy for those people who actually have to learn new things.
Oh.
Just use Face ID. You don't have to punch in anything.
Seriously.
Let's get to Face ID, shall we? That's great.
I'm not sure your phone wants to recognize you.
Maz has all that. You know, Maz is constantly talking to his phone and it's doing things.
I do. Hold on. I got to dictate a text to my wife.
Because Maz he wants to play with the technology.
Hey, Siri, text Natalie.
It's not a joke. Some people like playing with
Felger's
the technology.
Being an a-hole.
I'm just being realistic.
Do you want to send it?
Yes.
You know that the technology is a pain in the ass. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows I'm right. Hashtag truth. Me and this Red Sox pitcher. Hashtag truth. More thoughts on the Patriots. Go ahead.
She did just get the text.
Patriots talent level come up right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
For you.
Now.
Bring it back, bring it back. We're gonna light it up.
Now more Felger and Maz on the Sports Hub.
On a board, that's the best special teams player we'll play against all year. He's a great, great player.
That's just a way to get into this topic. It's Bill pleasuring himself over Chris Board prior to last year's game against the Lions. If you listen to the way Bill went on about this guy, Jimmy, do you have the second cut? And you know, take out like the first 30 seconds of it. We can't hear the question, or just pick it up in the middle of it. Or when Bill starts going, so Bill says that about Chris Board, like I want to say on Monday heading into the Lions game last year. Chris Board, I've never heard of the guy. He covers effing punts. one of the best special teams guys we'll face. So, of course, Bob Soucy, being the good team broadcaster, knows Bill, gets all horny for this. So Soucy follows up and asks him more about Chris Board. I honestly think Bill whipped it out. And when he started talking about this guy, listen to the way he talks about this guy that covers punts. You'd think the guy actually, I don't know, had an impact on NFL games or played a position that mattered. This is about a guy that covers punts. Listen to this.
Yeah, he's a very hard guy to match up against.
And for some reason, he called him Steve. I couldn't figure out what that mumble was there. But trust me, he was asked about Chris Board, and he's talking about Chris Board. But go ahead, right there.
He's a very hard guy to match up against. He's bigger than the players you referenced.
He's a hard guy. Just stop. He's a hard guy to match up against. He covers punts.
Right.
Go.
It's a size matchup's a problem for the faster, lighter guys, and speed matchup's a power matchup. It's a hard matchup for the bigger guys who don't run as well as he does. So, you know, he has a great combination of size, speed, as well as experience, instincts, techniques.
He covers kicks.
Techniques.
Keep going. He goes on and on.
You know, all of the above. You know, really no weaknesses in the player. You gotta figure out how to deal with him.
Well, he's a punt protector. Okay, like, it's just asinine.
It is asinine.
It's asinine.
And if this guy's got all that ability, how come he doesn't do more? But anyway.
So this is on the table because Ben Volen finally got around to writing what we've been ranting about for years, the overemphasis on special teams players in an era when the league is pretty much trying to outlaw the kicking game. And there's never been fewer returns. And Volen has some good numbers in here that I'm going to give you in a minute. But it's tied into ESPN and their analytics people or scouting people or whatever. Put together rankings of the team's top five players. So what they did is they took the top five players from every roster and ranked them. And then ranked the teams. Like, for example, Kansas City's top five players are Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, their center Humphrey, and their guard Joe Tooney. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And they rank number one in the league. Number two is Cincinnati. And my copy cut off, so I'm not sure exactly who they had on there. But obviously it's Burrow and it's Chase and it's Hendrickson on defense. I don't know who else they have on there. Number three is Philly. Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Lane Johnson, the tackle. Hassan Reddick, the outside linebacker. Darius Slay, the corner. So they take the top five players on the roster and rank them. So Philly's three, Miami's four, Buffalo's five. Dallas is six. Stop me when you get to New England. Chargers are seven. The Jets are eight. Baltimore, nine.
Jets are eight?
San Francisco's 10. Cleveland's 11. Jacksonville's 12.
Cleveland's 11.
Minnesota's 13. Seattle's 14. The Giants are 15. The Saints are 16. The Raiders are 17. The Lions are 18.
Wow, Lions.
Stop me when we get to the Patriots.
Lions are good.
Pittsburgh's 19. Denver's 20. The Rams are still 21st.
Huh.
Tennessee, 22nd. Carolina, 23rd.
Carolina, 23.
Green Bay, 24. Stop me when you get to the Patriots, please. 25 is Chicago. 26 is Tampa. 27 is New England.
25 is Chicago.
27. 27. Their top five players. Mac Jones, Matt Judon, Kyle Duggar, Josh Uche, Mike Nwenu. Is he still here?
Yes.
Yeah. Who was the one that...
Why is Jones on that list?
No, Owenu's the right guard.
No, Owenu, who's the one they just lost? Who they just cut?
Kajustic.
Yeah, so Kajustic.
Kajustic. Right,
hey, Kajustic.
But this is what I'm talking about. Kajustic, Owenu. Like, yeah. No, Owenu was good. All right,
you want the arancini? What do you like?
ESPN.com writes, it seems plenty plausible that Jones's 2021 rookie season, in which he ranked 16th in QBR, is more indicative of the player he'll become than what he did last year when he was ranked 28th. Judon and Uche combined for 27 sacks in 2022, but this core lacks superstars.
That's all you need. There's a lot of writing there. You just need that last sentence.
Listen,
this core lacks superstars.
If Uche's in your top five, you blow. He's not that good.
I agree.
But go ahead.
No, well, that's it. So they rank 20 in terms of high-end talent, they rank 27th. Yet, as Ben Volen, again, finally gets around to writing, and everyone who covers a team should be getting around to writing, the Patriots have extended themselves for special teamers again. Belichick signed the best core special teamer in the NFL, in his view, the Chris Board guy, gave his long snapper a record signing bonus, brought back Matthew Slater, drafted several special teamers, and made the Patriots the first team since the year 2000 to select both a kicker and a punter in the same draft.
That's unbelievable. I didn't know that thing about the draft.
Volin writes, there's just one problem with that. In 2023, the NFL is doing its best to minimize special teams, constantly fiddling with the rules to reduce the number of kick returns in the name of player safety. And then he has some great numbers, some of which we've given you, because we've done this rant and this topic forever. But it's just another sign of the game just totally passing Bill by. Him chasing these special teams players and investing them and spending money on them like it's still an important part of the game. He says, well, here we go. They still have, and half these guys you've never heard of. The Patriots still have veterans Cody Davis, Brendan Schooler, Rally Webb, and DeMarcus Mitchell, the five of whom combined for 1,264 special team snaps and 20 offensive and defensive snaps last year. So again, between these guys, Cody Davis, Brendan Schooler, Rally Webb, and DeMarcus Mitchell, over 1,200 special team snaps, but just 20 on offense defense.
Well, but I mean, you know, at least their special teams were good.
Scouts from other teams also expect third-rounder Marte Mapu to be a key special teamer while he develops as a safety and linebacker. The Patriots traded up to take kicker Chad Rayland in the fourth round, and they took the punter in the sixth. Sixth-rounder DeMario Douglas has added value as an excellent punt returner per an NFC coach. And seventh-round cornerback Amir Speed was by far our best jammer on the punt team, said Michigan State special teams coach Ross Ells.
Jammer?
The Patriots, don't forget, they also have two special teams coaches. They got... They still have Cam Accord.
And Joe Judge is taking part in
this. Super Joe.
And now the Hammerhead is over there as well.
Yeah, Super Joe.
So they've got like eight special teams-only players. They've got the highest-paid special teams player in the game in this Chris Board guy. They've got the high... They signed their long snapper to a record contract. They brought back Matt Slater on guaranteed millions of dollars. And they have all these other guys running around covering kicks. The only so as Volin writes, the Patriots' investment in special teams comes at the expense of depth on defense and especially offense, which ranks 22nd in touchdowns scored the last three seasons since Tom Brady left. The Patriots have had one of the worst receiving units in the NFL while using more roster spots on special teams-only players than any other team in the league. So they have used more roster spots on special teams only players than any other team in the league, all while their receiving core remains at the bottom of the league and they rank near the bottom of the league in touchdowns scored since Brady left.
And their special teams have sucked.
He says, beefing up on special teams is likely misguided in today's NFL. In 2002, an average NFL game saw approximately 230 special teams return yards. Again, okay. So in 02, 20 years ago, an average NFL game saw approximately 230 special teams return yards. In 2022, that number was basically cut in half to 116.
And that's two teams combined. Yep.
In 2011, now 10 years ago, the kickoff line was moved to the 30 to the 35, decreasing returns from 80% to 53% in 1 year. So prior to 2011, 80% of kickoffs used to be returned. When they moved it up to the 35, that went down to 53. In 2016, the NFL moved touchbacks from the 20 to the 25-yard line, which reduced kickoffs to its current 36 to 39% clip. And with the fair catch rule, the new fair catch rule, which you'll now automatically get at the 25, they expect it to be about 30%. So only 30% of kickoffs are even returned. 70% are going to be touchbacks or fair catches.
Correct.
70%. When Bill started here, it was 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, weren't returned.
This is good news for the Patriots, though, because now they won't have to cover those kicks.
The NFL hasn't made as many changes to punts, but punters have improved dramatically in hang time and corner accuracy. Last year saw 3.5 punt returns per game, compared with 4.9 in 05 and 6.0 in 1978. The last four seasons have each set a record for the fewest punt returns per game. And next year we'll set another record because that's the trend of the league. Yet Bill whips it out and pleasures himself over a punt cover guy like Chris Board and continues to spend and chase special teamers. Meanwhile, your high-end talent ranks in the bottom five in the league. That, to me, you put that together, there's a story there.
Oh, it's ass backwards, of course. Oh, there's a huge story there. The game has passed him by. He's playing a game that was played 20 years ago.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And look, it makes all the sense in the world, too, if you think about it. And I don't want to like delve into the details on the punt return numbers dropping. But even the guys that are out there that might have a return probably are being told fair catch it, because with the rules being what they are now, we can move the ball. So just get the ball, don't cause a turnover on special teams, and let's go the other way with the passing game.
Never mind, the whole trend in modern analytics in football is you go for it on fourth down, you don't kick. So the nerds have taken over that sport too. They've run all the numbers, and now all these teams just go for it on fourth. They don't even bring out the effing kicker. And when they do, it's just fair caught anyway. So you've got to be some kind of complete clown of a team to be bad on special teams in this day and age. You just have to line up and block it and punt the kick out of the effing end zone, and it's over. And you don't have to spend on it. Certainly at the expense of your offense and your defense. It's one of the most maddening things about the Patriots. We've been on this for a while. I'm glad the Globe have finally gotten, up to speed on it. So there's that. Here's a quick update with Murray and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more of Felger and Mann. Now, on the Sports Hub.
All right, back to your calls on everything. Drew and Mattapan has a Celtics thought. Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Two things that I wanted to talk about. One is they should get rid of Hauser, because they hired Hauser to be a three-point shooter off the bench. He did not do anything this year, and that's the reason why I think they lost the championship, because they had nobody like Hauser that's supposed to be like Hauser to shoot those threes when everybody else was resting. Number two, Chris Paul. Now, they're waving him, but does anybody – how come no one is talking about the last three seasons, and even when he was with Houston, once he gets to the playoffs, he always gets hurt.
Oh, I think everyone talks about it.
That's why they get rid of him.
True, I think everyone talks about it. Anyone talks about Chris Paul not being able to win at the end or stay healthy. That's the story on him. I'd still consider it if I were the Celtics. And I might be coming around to Trae Young, frankly. And did we get an email? Yes. With Trae Young, I think he leads the NBA in assists the last five seasons.
Something like that, yeah.
He's the assist leader the last 5 years. And, I think he's kind of a bitch, and he's sort of reckless offensively. Shoots, I think low percentage threes a lot. I think he fell in love with shooting from the logo and all of that. But what if he were in a different environment where he wouldn't have to carry the offensive load like he does there, where he wasn't the primary scorer? And he was more, for a guy who leads the league in assists, it feels to me like he's okay dishing the ball.
Oh, no. He can pass. Yeah, he's a pass. He can pass, rather. To me, it's more about his overall attitude. Like, his ability is not,
Well, no, but I'm talking more about, would he fit?
The fit.
Would he fit? Would he fit in terms of being the number two, being a facilitator, setting up Tatum, setting up his teammates, not being so much of a scorer, but being more of a pure point guard, and then the offense is there when you need it, and I'm here to support Tatum, and could he do that thing?
Maybe.
If he could, I think it's worth it. Because when he does get going, I have seen him be competitive and tough and clutch in those things, what he did in that Knicks series a couple of years ago. He took that team to the East Finals. You saw it in little snippets here against the Celtics in round one. He's got a little something. I think his negatives are clear, and I see him too. But in the right spot, do you sort of beat that out of him? I don't know. I think it's worth a consideration. The thing about, so it's crazy enough to have people call in and say they need to play Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard more. We get those all the time. Well, how come you don't play your bench? Why are you not playing those guys? It's another thing to say they lost because of those guys.
Yeah.
It's like both.
It's time to move on.
Guys, it's a non-factor. Yeah, right. Like Pritchard, Hauser, that end of the bench,
is a non-factor, plus or minus.
I can't, like, again, I'm glad you went back to this, because it, I can't believe people still get hung up on this. Let me ask you a question. How's Denver's bench?
Yeah, I don't think there's much there.
It blows. It blows. It, frankly, it's a two-man team.
Although that white kid went off last night. But
okay, but, yeah. But again, but
he's kind of interesting. Yeah. He's an energy
But
guy.
This is sort of the point.
But otherwise, that, no, it's like Jeff Green's still playing in this league.
Yes, exactly.
You Bingo. Yeah, but this is sort of the point that on any given night, someone pops out of the woodwork. One guy.
Yeah.
One guy they need to pump out of the woodwork. Michael Porter has sucked in this series.
He's been terrible.
Okay, but what's his name? Gordon is meh, and he starts anyway. But the point is, there is no bench. It's two guys. They score 70 points and they win because the two guys are so freaking good. Everyone else is, you know, you can get what you need out of them. You don't need a great bench. It's a myth.
But you do believe, Mez, just to his point, the Celtics shoot too many threes for a team that doesn't have a pure three-point shooter.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and I'm not sure Hauser would qualify either. Maybe he is. Like, but again, he's the ninth guy. You know, they don't have what I would categorize as a sniper. Like a legit 42% automatic guy if you leave him open.
Yeah.
You know, a J.J. Redick or like a guy like that. They don't have it.
And Brogdon is a 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah, but he needs space and time to get it off. You know, I'm talking about a guy who can catch it and shoot it. Like even Duncan Robinson.
Yeah.
They don't have that. They don't have that guy.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Cutter Crawford's 1-2 pitch. Nice knockdown there. It's going to roll to Valdez. Can he get it out? He'll flip and over the head of Casas. All the way down to third, Rosario. Crawford had to scurry back to the backstop. Into second goes Ramirez. Red Sox had a chance to get it out there. After it was initially deflected off Casas, Valdez with too much on it. And now the Guardians have two men in scoring position.
You know, this was the right play by Casas. The rocket hit at him, couldn't knock it down. If he chases after that, it's going to be a tough play flipping that back to Crawford on the run behind him. Valdez just a little bit too much mustard on that flip. Casas couldn't get his glove up to it since he was so close.
They have now charged two errors on that play. At first base, we mentioned the one on Valdez. The other one's going to be on Tristan Casas.
Yeah, I don't get that one. That would have been a heck of a play if he makes that. That ball smoked and he knocked it down. I see the E4 where that comes from. I don't understand the one to Casas.
Nobody out. Ground ball to third. Off the glove of Devers and a run is in. And everybody is safe. And the Red Sox are at it again defensively on a play that should have been made. 3-2 Cleveland.
This is a play he makes 99 times out of 100. Just clanks it. Costs him a run.
It's the third error the Red Sox have been charged with in the inning. And it's something that Cora has been talking about all season long. Red Sox shooting themselves in the foot. An error on the first baseman, the second baseman, and the third baseman in this inning.
Okay, another low for the Red Sox last night in that fourth inning, kicking the ball around. Just horrible Little League defense. And I don't know, is Alex Cora starting to do something about it? What transpired today, Mez?
Julian McWilliams of the Boston Globe just reported a short time ago that Alex Cora has benched Alex Verdugo, who will not be in the starting lineup tonight because in the seventh inning last night, there was two outs. Verdugo was on first base. Yoshida hit a dribbler to the right side. And Verdugo half-assed it to second base, kind of sort of pulled up about two-thirds of the way there. The first baseman then threw to second instead of going to first, and they got Verdugo out at second to end the inning. He was pulled in the bottom half of the inning. It was a close game, so, I mean, I'm guessing people theorized that there was some potential precautionary reason they took him out.
Yep.
He didn't run, so they pulled him. And I think they're now, look, I'll tell you from experience, the only way you find this out is if the team leaks it. or a teammate does.
Of course.
Okay, there's no other way for you to find out. So I remember when the Red Sox did this with Carl Everett, when they suspended him, they called the media. And they told the media that they were suspending Carl Everett because he was repeatedly late and, you know, he missed a bus or whatever. That's how it got out without getting into, the particulars of who called. But they put it out that way, and this feels to me like a similar kind of thing. So they're making an example of Verdugo. They've identified him as the guy they're going to pin it on.
Kind of a mess right now,
well,
that team.
Well, yeah, which, again, is sort of a separate story. I'm not telling you he doesn't deserve it. He's had an issue throughout his career of being a guy who sort of turns it on and off and plays when he wants. Cora spoke with him about it during the offseason. It was part of the reason that Verdugo got up to a good start. He was in better shape. His focus was better. He was playing hard every day. Clearly, they sense him slipping, and they're going to start pointing fingers.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I take, is that they're going to start calling people out.
We'll see how that goes. So we can weigh in on the Red Sox and the state of the team right now, which obviously not good, and everything else we've hit on today as well. How about Devin and Lynn on the MLS streaming thing? Go ahead, Devin.
I think you're overlooking the amount of international streamers that this is going to bring in. Everybody who's a fan of him in Europe and South America is going to bring in huge numbers. And if that draws a ton of eyes for people who would normally thumb their nose at this league because they're obsessed with their European leagues that are way better, if you can convert even just a fraction of them to fans of the MLS, maybe some of them like the product, I think it brings a lot of advertising money if they stay and start rooting for these teams, kind of how
Devin,
people here root for Manchester.
Devin, okay.
Yes.
But MLS does not need Argentinian soccer fans. They don't need Brazilian soccer fans. I mean, they'll take them, but for it to really work here, they need American soccer fans. So this is one of the things about the MLS streaming thing is that it's international.
Right.
You know, unlike other rights agreements, you can dial up this MLS, this FRCACTA MLS package on Apple Plus TV, whatever, wherever you are in Timbuktu. So there's more opportunity, but it's like, so okay, you'll get a bunch of streamers in Denmark. Stick your finger in your cheek. That's not what the MLS needs. The MLS needs us, Americans. And so I don't care. Like, is it a good deal for Apple Plus? Probably. Is it a good deal, business deal for Messi? I mean, not as good as a Saudi deal. That's not what I'm talking about. I think they're selling themselves short in growing the sport here in America by putting it on the stupid internet, is what I think. Pat Newton on that. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, Messi coming to the league does nothing for the league, aside from the whole streaming stuff. This whole, like, bring in talent is not, like, a soccer thing. If you look at the clubs in Europe, they're all based as, like, neighborhood clubs. Like, Liverpool, as much of a big club it is it starts as a neighborhood. They have to answer to locals at, you know, to some extent anyway, same with all the other big clubs. And that's why American sports will always be inferior to European sports. I don't need a big stadium and a big empty parking lot in the middle of nowhere. Give me a local club that can be promoted and relegated like everybody
Well,
else.
Short of that, I mean, you're talking decades and decades and decades to build that thing. The Revs have a club, like they're starting to do this, but don't bring in Lionel Messi. Because you don't have a proper club to support it? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
I mean, this guy's trying to, you know, compare something you just planted into a ground to a 130-year-old tree.
Exactly.
It's like, what are you trying to do? Forget it. It's not the same thing. And I understand your point about how it doesn't serve the American fan. Maybe they've given up on the American fan. Maybe they said, screw it. You know, I don't know whether you could predict that they knew Messi was coming here or not. So I'm sort of putting that together with this. But maybe they just said, screw it, we're better off trying to sell subscriptions internationally than we are in the United States because we're in it for now.
I just think it's a mistake. I try and put myself in front of the most eyeballs as possible, and they're limiting themselves with the streaming package. Tom and Quincy, go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I was calling about the state of the Red Sox, but real quick with this Alex Verdugo news, the only concern I have with benching him is because he's one of three everyday players they have on the team. So I don't know who the hell you're going to fill right field with, but whatever. We'll watch and probably end up turning out what it looked like last night. My problem with the way they play, I have a problem with everything and on how they play right now. The main thing, the defense has turned into an absolute disgrace. But that happens when you put people that either don't play that position in that position or play a 4A guy that's really a career platoon or minor league bus rider and have him play every day. these guys get exposed. They get exposed in the field, and they get exposed at the plate.
Okay, well, that's true. Except, how do you explain Rafi Devers at third base? He had another one last night. Has he gotten any – I think I said this
No,
the
this
day.
Year he's regressed.
Has he gotten any better at that position?
Last year he played better there, but this year he's regressed. It's part of the reason he got the contract last year. Or, you know, they were willing to go there. It's okay, he put work into it. He became a better fielder. This year, I think he's borderline checked out. And look, now Cora is sort of alluding mysteriously or cryptically to this, you know, that there could be something going on behind the scenes with Rafael Devers. And I would tell you, I don't really give a rat's ass if there is or there isn't. If you're out there, you're expected to produce. End of story. So what I would worry about with Devers is that you just signed him to this deal and now you're not putting a team around him. So if he not that it justifies him checking out, but is this a side effect of not putting a team on the field? And the Verdugo thing, just to bring it all the way back to the same thing, Mike, this is a sign of a minor league team. As Tom said, he's one of the three everyday players. So if now you are trying to bring along young players, what do? You start making examples of guys who are veterans who, you know, you might be able to sacrifice. And Verdugo sort of strikes a chord in me anyway, because anytime the Mookie Betts trade comes up, people start talking about Verdugo. Well, you got Verdugo. What's Verdugo exactly? He's okay. He's an okay big leaguer. He's not an all-star. He's not a batting champion. He's not any of that. He's just an everyday player who should be hitting seventh in a good lineup. So let's not go turning in Verdugo to some sort of, you know, some sort of significant acquisition in the Mookie deal. He's not. And now they're benching his ass. So, like, you know, to me, in a lot of ways, it's getting worse.
Hour to go. Your phone's on everything. Right after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.